Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
Who's responsible for the Washington, D.C. and Flint water crises? Let's go in depth with a man who exposed the cover-up, Mark Edwards, a civil and environmental engineer at Virginia Tech. Mark, where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Buffalo, New York area, but now I'm a professor at Virginia Tech.
And what do you teach?
I teach environmental engineering.
Okay, so what were your degrees? How do you get to be an environmental engineer?
I took an unusual path. I failed at just about everything. I wanted to be a dolphin trainer, a veterinarian, a MD, and biophysics undergraduate. But eventually I heard about Love Canal, and I said, hey, I've never had an engineering class, but I can do that. And I'll have an ability to positively impact more people. And that's proven to be a case. So I went to grad school, master's, PhD at the University of Washington. Environmental engineering has been wonderful.
Okay, Love Canal. Explain Love Canal to some of our younger listeners who might not remember Love Canal.
Fascinating story. So Niagara Falls, cheap source of electricity, brings in all the chemical industries. And they had a big hole in the ground. And to get rid of their hazardous waste, they filled this hole up with barrels, put a few feet of topsoil on it, and sold it to an elementary school for a dollar. Can't make this story up.
Oh,
and houses built around it. Mom started figuring out their kids were getting sick, and they became activists and actually exposed this, forced the government to take action, and created the whole Superfund program that you hear about in the U.S.
Wow. Okay. And then to some of your more current work, you uncovered a lead scandal in D.C. and the one everybody's heard about in Flint, Michigan. Tell us about that. Everybody's seen the images. Everybody's heard the stories, the poor kids, the brain development. Not clean water in Flint to this day. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved with that? Let's start. What made you start poking at that?
Started out, I was hired by the EPA to fix the DC lead problem, and realized that the agencies were the problem, and I got fired. Soon I was no longer working with the EPA, and that sent me on a collision course because they, after it was exposed in the paper, they covered up all evidence of wrongdoing, protecting their jobs. So 6 years, $1 million, 30 hours a week I worked to uncover that scientific and engineering misconduct, falsified reports that the CDC and EPA wrote. We were vindicated in a congressional investigation in 2011, but the agencies learned nothing from this except, frankly, they can get away with anything. All the unethical actors kept their jobs. Brave whistleblowers lost their jobs. So, you know, human history, so if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're doomed to repeat them. And we prepared for the day when it would happen again, when not if, and that day came in 2014 in Flint, Michigan.
Okay, and so what happened in Flint?
Flint switched water sources, and they forgot to follow federal law.
They forgot?
Well, I think most engineering science tragedies start out with innocent mistakes. The difference between good scientists and bad scientists is not, it's what they do with the mistakes, because a good scientist will recognize it first, fess up, and get it fixed. And the bad ones will cover it up and never learn. And unfortunately, there was a group there at MDEQ, Michigan Environmental Quality Department, they're the primacy agency that determines is Flint meeting federal law, and they were a bunch of bad actors, no doubt about it. And so they covered, not only did they fail to follow the law, but they worked overtime to cover it up in the face of citizens who felt they were getting rashes, lead exposure. Ultimately, we know they got exposed to Legionella, and there were people who died. So this is a horror story, and it's a case of environmental policemen becoming environmental criminals, and most people can't wrap their head around that. They want to put this in some kind of political narrative, like surely there must be an evil policy or an evil politician that caused this. At its core, no, that's not what happened. It was scientific and engineering misconduct, the same misconduct that happened in D.C., that happened in dozens and dozens of other cities, but The difference is that in Flint they got caught and people cared.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Mark Edwards, the man who exposed the cover-up of the Washington, D.C. and Flint water crises. Okay, so how did you find out there was something wrong? I mean, how news reports, somebody say, hey, we've got a problem here because of your past experience?
Well, the first thing was we'd been predicting this would happen, and so we were prepared, but the true story was uncovered by citizens of Flint. One exemplar is Leanne Walters, a mom, had twin boys. The growth of one was being stunted, and she figured out why. It was lead. She figured out where the lead was coming from. It was the drinking water. She figured out Flint was not following federal corrosion control law. This mom figured all this out herself. She did all the science. And she did it in collaboration with a brave EPA employee named Miguel Del Toro, who's in Region 5 Chicago, and he put his career on the line to help them, and he brought me in. And together, the three of us were working on this for some 6 months. And the odd goal we had was to force EPA to do their job, force EPA to enforce federal law in Flint. And we had a strategy where EPA could be the heroes. Like, we plotted this out where Miguel wrote a memo. And all they had to do was, like, admit the memo was right and implement federal law, and EPA could have been the hero. But unfortunately, Miguel's boss retaliated against him, and he was told he could no longer work with or talk to anyone from Flint, and EPA was in cahoots with this cover-up. So at that point, we launched, you know, an assault, essentially a science war against these corrupt agencies with Flint residents. And we fought that war on many fronts, and it was very, very successful.
And but the outcome is they still don't have the clear water that they need, the lead-free water, right?
Well, first off, Flint has been meeting all federal laws now for more than 3 years.
Okay.
And you're not getting that story in the national media for a variety of reasons. But the agencies, once they admitted there was a problem, of course, hundreds of millions of dollars flowed to Flint. There's been $600 million of relief. And within a year, the water was meeting federal standards. Does that mean it's safe? No, I wouldn't say any water in America is safe. Bottled water has plasticizers in it, for example. But Flint has water that's in the range and has been in the range of other cities for more than 3 years.
How come I don't know that? Am I just missing the literature?
Because it's dishonesty, because there's people with agendas who want to make a perception that this crisis is ongoing and people don't care. We live in a culture of victimization, a victim culture. And so some people, you know, and you can't fault them because Flint's in desperate financial situation. This has been a way to get hundreds of millions of dollars. And there's billions of dollars in class action lawsuits at stake here. And so many people have an agenda to make it appear that no one cares, which is patently false, to make it appear that the water's not better when it is. And that doesn't mean that the lost trust wasn't justified, because it was a failure of government at all levels. But you know, there are facts involved here, and those facts are not consistent with the present-day narrative that you'll hear from some quarters.
Well, this is all very disheartening. Problems with government, problems with the media, problems with scientists. And only heroes I see are, you know, lower-level scientists and mom, and one mom, and you know, the other people that worked with you as part of this.
And so right, and it's kind of weird that, you know, you'd be a hero for just doing your job, but that's, you know, the commentary on America, like present-day America. You do sometimes have to be heroic to just do your job, like Miguel at EPA, who wrote the memo and was retaliated against. Now, of course, he's received awards and recognition for his work, but that speaks to a corrupt culture in our agencies and in science that's very, very worrisome, and it belies this plummeting trust in institutions of all sorts. And some of that trust is being lost because we're no longer deserving of trust.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Mark Edwards, the man who exposed the cover-up of the Washington, D.C. and Flint water crises. So where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here? Interesting question. Well, one would hope that we would restore, you know, the value of truth-speaking and truth-seeking. But frankly, in today's tribal society, that's not valued. One of the unpleasant realities about the truth is a lot of people don't want to hear it. And so they have to, you know, look at their own problems and fixing things internally within their institutions. And it's easier to just cast blame elsewhere and pretend that these are all external pressures. But we're bringing a lot of this on ourselves through our own unethical behavior. And so I think the main thing is for government agencies to be worthy of the public trust. And there's reasons why they're misbehaving. There's reasons why there's misconduct. It's the institutional reward structure. If you punish good actors, they leave. And if you reward bad actors, they're in positions of power. So I think it really reflects a lot of problems that we're facing in society. We're becoming increasingly tribal. And it's because our first loyalty is not with the truth and truth speaking.
And why is that?
Well, I think this is, really the human problem of all time. We're genetically hardwired to be tribal. Loyalty to your institutions is always been rewarded. It was only in the last few hundred years that we developed higher loyalties. You know, in the Western cultures, it was science with the Enlightenment some 300, 400 years ago. In Eastern cultures, it was a philosophy of social responsibility. But it's only in these last few hundred years that there's been a higher loyalty than tribalism, and that's not hardwired into our DNA. We can lose that. We can lose all the gains of civilization that this higher loyalty has given to us, and I think we're in a battle for that right now when the stakes have never been higher because we're completely dependent on institutions and trust to maintain this huge population we have.
Well, and I was reading something the other day that was saying that processing all of this as individuals is very difficult. And this was an analysis of why autocrats are rising, autocratic figures are rising in a lot of places around the world. And we've had dictators, I guess there's like 80-some dictators around the world right now. But that processing the real world is a complex phenomenon, and sometimes we strive for simple answers. Mm-hmm. And in those autocratic personalities, that's where we find those easy answers. And so I guess that's reinforcing what you were saying about tribalism.
Well, absolutely. And history has shown us there's two ways to respond to adversity. The first and the simplest way is to blame others. Who did this to us? But the more productive path is to also consider how did we do this to ourselves? And that's where we start getting into the troubling questions, right? But it's always been the most productive path because I do feel that a lot of our ills are self-inflicted. And we're living through a backlash against our own lack of valuing truth.
We can't even decide what truth is anymore on
no.
many things.
Or is it a value? And so we revert to tribalism because that's where the rewards are. If you hunt truth seekers and truth speakers to extinction, you'll be successful.
And democracy at risk.
Oh, yeah.
You say that so easily. It's just remarkably tragic for democracy to be at risk.
Well, I mean, there's a book, for example, there's a lot of analysis of this, why democracies die. Democracies are not permanent. There's something precious. There's something you have to fight for. And some people predicted that it's a right that had to be earned and that those who inherited that right were destined to not appreciate it and waste it. So I hope that's not the case. I'm an optimist. I think we can get this changed. But if not, it's gonna end badly, just like it did in other parts of history. That seems to be the cycle we go through.
But what can we do? What can just the average person do in this kind of an environment? What should we be doing?
Well, I think this post-truth society is a sad commentary on all of us. I mean, tribalism really is hardwired into our DNA, and it takes extraordinary effort to have a higher loyalty, to have a higher loyalty to the truth or to social responsibility over our self-interest. And in the past, we've had leaders that did that. And I just don't see that right now. But we're bringing this on ourselves.
So what kinds of characteristics do we need in the individuals that we choose to lead us?
Well, I think it all starts with scientists and citizens having humility and acknowledging that we're all flawed, that we all are in fact sinners, that we all are in fact inclined to believe things that are not true because it's easier. And with that humility, you can have, you know, the scientific method, which is a path that followed that can more often than not get you to the truth. But it's proven that you had to work against your human nature to be disciplined and to achieve that objective. So I think the way out of this is to cultivate the scientist that exists within all of us, the skeptic, the person who questions our initial inclinations, that spends as much time questioning what their tribe is doing and criticizing it as they do others. What a different world it would be if we all spent half our time criticizing and getting fixed the ills of our own tribe.
Thanks to Mark Edwards for contributing to the program.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in-depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.